Yes, fair and well, no, I can't complain. I got thoughts up there in that so-called brain, and I'm hunting for one I hit a long, long time ago. See, it happened before I knew you so well, and hell, it happened before that wish fell down that well, and well, it happened before our parents got older. Said it happened before I knew you so well, and hell, it happened before that wish fell down that well, and well, it happened before our parents got older. Now I done lost my mind down there in North Carolina, drunk talking on some homemade wine and dreaming about the old days. You know, God's down here, cause every sign I see is asking me where I want to spend my eternity, and I don't know where I'll be, but I know where I am now. I've been catching hell from these westward winds, letting Atlantic waves crash away my sins. Let them roll till I'm sacred and holy. I've been catching hell from these westward winds, letting Atlantic waves crash away my sins. Let them roll till I'm sacred and holy. Now I done lost my mind down there in North Carolina, drunk talking on some homemade wine and dreaming about the old days. So I gotta kill this time, jumping back to 1929, and thank the Lord for my old-fashioned mind, just dreaming about the old days.
Yay. Oh, so good. So that was Kyle Tiggs. Okay.
Like Tigger.
I was struggling with that. Like Tigger. Maybe by the end of the show, I'll have that solid.
You got it.
He is a singer-songwriter currently based in Brooklyn, but from Illinois, which makes you a what?
Illinoisian.
You're an Illinoisian. He's joining me here, and you've been mentioned in a couple of different local newspapers or like articles that I found, which is, I just saw two. No, I can't remember, and I can't connect to the internet. So, alas, he is here with me in the basement of the Viola Bike Shop, and you are listening to Ink and Worm, and I'm your host, Swan. It is rumored that Bob Hope said people who throw kisses are hopelessly lazy. And I suppose that Sundays are lazy days, and I'm blowing kisses to you from here, so we can go with that. But I also take issue with that, because sometimes you have to put some thought into blowing a kiss. Anyways, check me out on social media. I'm on all the things, and I would love to talk to you, and thanks for listening. So I love that a couple days ago we were checking about the date, and you emailed me and you're like, I don't actually really finish books, but I've started lots of books that I pick up on the street. Let's talk about that for a minute. Any that stand out in your mind as like particularly good starts?
Sure. Well, I think probably before I moved to New York 8 years ago, I didn't read much at all. I didn't even... Before I moved to New York, it was more just an academic thing. You know, I always related it back to childhood of having the assignment of reading and having the pressure and the stress of reading. And I think I found out in myself that I'm like more of a slow reader, you know, in general. Like I need to like kind of like take my time and breathe while I'm reading, or else I find that like I read a page or two and I'm like, what happened? You know, and I still have that, you know, have that when I'm reading. So like in school, when you're pressured to read, it's just like,
it's not fun.
Yeah,
anymore.
It wasn't fun at all. And so I never had the joy of reading really until like I came here, and you'd be walking down the street and you'd see a pile of books and you'd be like, oh, free books, interesting. And you'd go through it, and you, at that point, like there's no pressure, there's no expectation. It's just like whatever comes to you at that time is maybe going to be a fun thing to find out about.
Yeah.
You know, and education then became more about like knowledge and not just about information, you know, like, and so that's when I started to read again. And, you know, you find all kinds of, or I guess an eclectic mix of books on the street, and, or you find an eclectic mix of everything. I remember, I was walking down Dumbo and I found these two massive canvas signs. It looked like somebody was like throwing them out from a kid's birthday party.
Uh-huh.
And one of them was like a bullseye thing that you throw like beanbags through or whatever.
Okay.
And one of them was a big poster of a donkey. No, not a donkey. See, I messed it up. Of a monkey. And it was like pin the tail on the monkey. And I was like, that's really odd. And it was a little creepy too.
Did you pick him up?
Yeah, I picked him up and I carried him around for... Oh, I was with my wife's folks. I ended up taking him on the train to the 9/11 memorial, which was like not the best thing to be walking in with, you know, at that time. And so, like, I had taken him that far. I was just, we had to do something with them. So, like, we tried to hang them in our apartment. They were too big. And so they're still around, you know. I wrote a song about those.
They're waiting for their spot. Yeah, share the song.
Well, I'll just play the song. I'll do more playing today, I think.
Yeah.
If that's all right with you.
Go for it.
Maybe I'm just a teapot with a broken whistle. Got no bullseye on my board. Blindfold spin, pin the tail on the monkey. I feel like I've never felt before. Stand up tall, but I'm not greedy. Keep my chin up towards the sky. Stare at my nose till it falls off my body. That's when I'll know for sure I'm not afraid to die. Cause baby, I'm just a teapot with a broken whistle. Got no bullseye on my board. Blindfold spin, pin the tail on the monkey. I feel like I've never felt before. Dogs wearing jackets and these people are freezing. Mommy, I wanna move to another state. I chime in, yeah, me too. That mommy keeps walking, see? Mommy makes the money, but mommy's money makes her late. Cause baby, I'm just a teapot with a broken whistle. Got no bullseye on my board. Blindfold spin, pin the tail on the monkey. I feel like I've never felt before. Two women kissing right at the tip of my face.
Same two women sitting on my lap. They don't do it for me, it's for the whole human race. They say the earth's a bubbling bottle, this bottle needs a bottle cap. Says, baby, I'm just a teapot with a broken whistle. Got no bullseye on my board. Blindfold spin, pin the tail on the monkey. I feel like I've never felt before. Well, I feel like I've never felt before. Well, I feel like I've never felt before.
Yay! How do the words come to you? Have you been writing songs, like as long as you can remember? Like, how does that flow happen?
Yeah, well, I think when I was my like early teens, I was writing a lot, you know, just like poems or whatever. And before I started playing guitar, and then when I could, I guess, barely play guitar, I could just like put my fingers down on the frets and go like, oh, that sounds pretty, or oh, that sounds weird, you know, like, and so like I would just kind of, I would find something that sounded decent and tweak it a little bit, and then from that, like, I don't know if I used any poems like from like my, like when I was like 12 or 13 for songs, or if it was just like I kind of got sick of doing that, like I guess, yeah. And so I don't know. Ever since then, like I remember the first song I wrote was like just like a cheesy like song about the Brady Bunch. I remember singing it to my sister, but I couldn't even sing it to you right now how yeah. it goes. But ever since then, like, you know, there just be something that sparks interest. You know, like pin the tail on the monkey.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're walking around, and I think most people who come up with songs just kind of have like melodies going over and over in their heads, you know.
Sure.
And so you kind of just plug things into those melodies, and then from there it's pretty, I don't know, it's not so complicated, just like rhyming and, you know, like putting things together.
That's nice. So playing guitar was kind of a catalyst for you in terms of like figuring out that you were a songwriter. Is that how it kind of happened, if I heard?
Yeah, I could say that. At that time I was playing French horn, you know, that was like my major music thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was very structured and regimented in that, and it was like, it was pretty competitive back in Illinois about, or you know, the band program, I remember being very competitive, and it was a great experience, but it was also not like close to, I think you could call it like my musical core, you know, like it was mm-hmm. like, it was kind of like a sport, you know, so I got really good because like I wanted to be the best.
Yeah.
And that's not very nurturing to any like musical self, I don't think. Like, and so guitar, like I could, you know, I had the guitar, I learned how to play like a melody, and then I had a friend who played bass, and he like showed me a couple things and just kind of went from there, you know.
Nice. I'm curious, so you talked about in school how reading became kind of arduous just because of the nature of school and homework. I'm curious if there were any books that you read, like that were assigned reading, that have stuck with you. Just because I know that sometimes I ended up reading books that I wouldn't have read otherwise.
Sure.
And then they, I mean, even now sometimes I'll find myself thinking about them or the themes that, you know, that introduced.
Yeah.
I
don't so much remember the book, because I read it just to read it. You know, I mm-hmm. read it as like to memorize and to like get it right or whatever. I don't remember
get the test questions.
Yeah, but you know, I do remember at the end of reading any book, we watched the movie. You
oh,
know?
So score.
Like, you know, so I always looked forward to that, and you know, I remember like, what was it? Lord of the Flies.
Oh, that one's heavy.
And The Outsiders.
Oh, okay.
Romeo and Juliet.
The
yeah,
kind of standard school fare.
Yeah.
Reading.
So I didn't get so much from it. You know, like, I think probably the first book that I found out here that, like, really shifted my way of reading was this book called Light on Yoga.
Oh.
The Iyengar mm-hmm. book, and it was like it was right on a time. Like I had no idea. Like I mean, what yoga was. I'd never practiced it. I'd never gone to a class or whatever. And I found this book, and it was right at the time that I had a guitar student who stopped taking guitar lessons and was like, "Oh hey, I want to start learning to teach yoga. Can we trade lessons?" And so I did like 2 private yoga lessons with her and like in exchange for a guitar lesson. Uh-huh. And then I got that book right at that time. Uh-huh. And I told her, "Oh yeah, I found this yoga book." She's like, "That's the book." And yeah. I was like, "What? The
book?" It's like the Bible of yoga.
Yeah.
I'm actually a yoga teacher because I think that's like the new thing. Everyone is a yoga teacher. Like if you do yoga, you're also a teacher.
Sure.
It just like became that thing. But that's like the book that everyone has to read when you first like begin to learn about yoga and about teaching it. So I'm curious, because the voice in there is kind of borderline academic, I would say.
And yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, but it's academic, but it's all, there's a way in which he writes that's kind of like poetic. And especially when I read the intro to that book probably 40 times.
Oh, it's so good.
You know, like, and then after that, it has like all of the, like the instructions for the asanas and the pranayamas, like the breathing and the breathing and the mm-hmm. the postures. And I think I'm still doing like the same 3, like from the beginning, because it, like, it's just so comprehensive that like, yeah. I don't know, like, but reading it, like I realized that, you know, I thought yoga was all just physical.
Mm.
And I had never really even looked into like Eastern ways of thinking at all until that point. And so it was a really hard read. Cause again, like I said, I read slow. I was there with my Franklin. It was like, mm-hmm. it's like that pocket dictionary. My mom got it for me for in high school.
Nice.
And I was like looking up words and like maybe spending.
Did the words show up?
Well, not like the Sanskrit words,
okay,
but
okay.
like, you know, just in general, like the language in it. And I was looking those up. And I remember spending lots of time with this book and like not just like trying to read it to get it done, but like being like, wait, I got to start over, you know, like, and I'd read like 2 pages and I'd start over and I'd read like 3 pages and then I'd start
over.
You
just like wanted to absorb it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because the way of thinking is so, I don't know, maybe it was more about like my ignorance of that process in general.
Yeah.
And so
we're just so different from like Western thought and like the Western way of approaching. I love that.
Yeah.
I also, I found, and I read that one years ago when I was doing my teacher training, and same thing, like for me, the introduction is like highlighted and annotated and I don't even mark books very often, but that one I was just like, what? This is so potent, but because you could read the same line like 5 different times and each time you're just like, I don't get it. Maybe I get it. Let me read it again. Okay. Oh, wait. No. Like you just start sitting with it and you have to like almost digest it. And I also love the transition, I think, between, the words that he chooses are kind of sometimes not words that are as common in the English language. And I find that so charming because it makes it fresh. It makes it like, you know? And sometimes you have to pull out a dictionary to be like,
right.
I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, yeah. In my case, like every sentence.
Oh.
But you know, it was almost like a process of, you know, like foundational work for me, you know, because we all learn so much and there's so much information out there that like I almost had to like deprogram myself a little bit with it, you know, like I stopped listening to so much music like on my commutes, you know, because I feel and
sure.
I stopped using so much like social media and internet stuff unless I had to.
Yeah.
And I almost had to like clear myself of
mm-hmm.
like the overstimulating nature of New York City anyway.
Oh gosh.
You know, and so like it's
so easy to just plug in.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember like back to like books on streets, like this is more from there's a couple who sells books. I don't know if they're a couple. They said they weren't married, but they're very sweet. Peter and Nina, they set up a book stand on DeKalb. Now, I've gotten quite a few books from them. And one of them was like around the same time with the Light on Yoga thing that was called Make Your Mind an Ocean. And I was like, I read the beginning of that, and I was like, all right, you know, and like, and I started reading that, and like, I guess from a different classification of whatever religion or thought or spirituality, but I'm starting to realize that, like, you know, my Catholic upbringing, the stuff that I'm reading about yoga, like this, like these Buddhist texts, this whatever, because you find so much on the street. I found like all these books that were like supposedly in my head all like categorized. It's like that's a different thing, that's a different thing, that's a different mm-hmm. thing, that's a different thing, and then reading them and kind of digging into them, and like also you know writing songs and thinking a lot about life and death and blah blah blah, like
yeah.
realizing like we're all saying the same thing, like it's all the same thing.
Sure.
And I don't know where I was going with that, but
I don't know.
I wrote a song about the ocean thing.
Oh, I was just gonna say, let me do my, because I was holding on to that. I love the visual that like just created in my mind.
Oh, thank you.
Of just like make your mind an ocean, and it reminded me of in the book. I think it's The Little Princess. It might be The Secret Garden, actually. Frances Hodges Burnett. And one scene, a girl is talking to her friend, and she's talking about how this guy, he looked normal, but if you open his mouth, you'd see the whole universe. And the kid got really mad. He's like, that's not possible. Like, physically, it cannot happen. And then later on in the story, he's just like, I know what that feels like. I've got the whole universe. It's all in here. And she's like, great, you got it. So go ahead and introduce your song.
I will. I'll use this. I got this harmonica or some... Ramel. You know Ramel?
She does the Deer Hammer. I know show. You. I know you because of Ramel.
Right.
Yes.
Her uncle gave me this.
Ah.
Yeah. Upstate at their wedding in Lake George. They found it in Germany.
Ooh.
And it was in like his museum. Like he worked at like a World War II museum.
Wow.
And he brought it to me at their wedding. It was like, you should play this. And I was like, all right.
An artifact.
Will.
Let's go.
Kind of sounds like an accordion. Ocean and all you do is flow, and pray to God there's no holes in your boat, but you're born bound to drown. You dove down and all you wrote is I'm not your fortress, I'm not your fortress. I'm not your fortress. I'm just the water in your moat. You grew up with a path over one eye and told the truth so much now you don't lie. Your words pour down like water from gray skies, crying, I'm out of focus. You're out of focus. We're all out of focus, but we've got love behind our eyes. You're looking through a window at a door. Open up, step in, there's a mirror on the floor. Looking down, look up in the center, you're the core.
surrounded by beauty. When you're surrounded by beauty, when you're surrounded by beauty, then you require nothing more.
Yay.
Sometimes I keep going, I don't know.
I remember, so that's, I love now knowing the backstory, because I met you at a party that Ramel organized, and you were singing, which is how we're here now. Yeah. And that's the song that stuck with me. And so, like, having more, I guess, to chew, it just makes the song all the more, like, there. I like that. It's really great.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in. This is Ink and Worm. I'm your host, Swan, and we're here with Kyle Tigges. Tigges?
You got it.
Oh, closer. Still some hesitation, but I might get it yet. I'm curious to know, let's see, what am I curious to know? Mississippi cotton. Cotton.
Yeah,
spelled with an E.
With an E.
So if you guys are digging this music, you can Google it. Mississippi cotton spelled with an E at the end. How did that come about?
The name or the...
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm going to tune while I talk. When I started the Mississippi cotton thing was more, I guess it was at a time where I just kind of wanted to take things down to the root, I guess, a little bit more. Like, I was playing in a band at that time that was in the process of, like, businessizing, I would say, you know, like, which is a natural thing to do for any band trying to make it, right? And so, like, playing in New York and being kind of immersed within this music game was really fun, and then at a point it was really frustrating and disheartening. You know, I remember being in a meeting with this guy about PR, and he was saying, like, you know, how many great things he could do for us if we just had, you know, another $6,000 to give him. And, like, and we were considering this because, like, it makes sense. You want to promote yourself. You want to, like...
Sure. And having someone else to do that for you seems really powerful, because then it's kind of like someone else can do that and you can focus on the music.
Yeah, yeah, which is great. But in this situation, like, we're sitting in a room similar to this, and... You know, he didn't know how to spell the name. He hadn't heard anything. Like, he wasn't, like, behind it. He was just, like, it was his business.
He was just like, give me money and I'll do something.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
and he's like, but don't call it money. Call it support. He kept on saying, don't call it money. Call
that's
it
kind
support.
Of annoying.
Yeah, and I was like, I don't know if this was before or after the Mississippi Cotton thing, but, like, because of things like that, was like, I really wanted to re-explore where I was maybe when I was like 14 or 15, just writing songs or coming up with songs, not even thinking of it as like writing songs.
Sure.
You know, just like singing about things that you see, singing about things that you feel. And like, there's like in Mississippi, like one of the guys that I took, Mississippi John Hurt and then Mississippi Fred McDowell, both two like old blues guys, and there's this great record from Mississippi Fred McDowell that goes like, he always introduces himself. He's like, hi, I'm Fred McDowell. My home is in Rofer, Tennessee. But that's all right. I feel at home when I'm in Mississippi, and he kind of just like goes on and talks about his style, and like he's like, you see what? I don't write no songs. It's just my own natural blues, and like, I mean, and when he said that, I was like, man, like, that's right. He didn't ask to be famous or acknowledged. Like somebody came and got him, you know, because like he was just like rocking in his hometown, you know, like, and he was just doing his thing and singing about his wife and singing about the weather and singing about this and singing
his
about
blues.
That. And his blues. This is just my straight natural blues. And I was like, man, like, I never want to try to make a record ever again, you know, like, like after thinking that, or at least like produce one, like make it a product, you know, like, and that's kind of what the Mississippi Cotton thing was for me, was the ability to kind of just make records that were records. Like, it wasn't fancy. I just had a reel to reel. I hit record and recorded songs and then posted them like over the course of 3 or 1.5 or 2 years or something.
Yeah. From your website, there's like 12, I think 12 like things to hit on, and then each is a different, that like different recording sessions that you had?
Yeah. Nice. So I think I started like New Year's of going into 14, maybe? I forget. Maybe going into 14, yeah. And more of just like a nostalgic thing, you know, like feeling like I've got this music and, you know, I've got all these songs, I want to share them, and who do I want to share them with? Like, before it was like, the world! And, then it was like, wait, like, maybe just with my family and my friends and people that I know. And so, like, I started just, like, and I'd email them once a month. Like, oh, here's 3 songs that I just recorded and, you know, some BS, you know, of my thoughts about things and stuff, you know. And
that, like, that sounds like a really great email list. And
yeah, I haven't done one for a while.
Bringing it back to, like, a community thing of, like, you have to, I don't know, you in on the community to get this special thing. Have you heard of Patreon?
Mm-mm.
Oh, perhaps it would be a good
platform.
Yeah, so it's kind of, like, it's kind of homage to, like, the throwback arts where you were an artist, but you would find some rich person to be your Patreon or, like, your patron who would, like, support your life so that you could make your art. Like, all these old painters a lot of times had people who were commissioning bigger pieces so that they could spend the rest of their time doing whatever other art came to them. Anyways, it's this really, really interesting profile. It's kind of based on a pay what you want type format, and different people can choose different amounts, and you can choose like, okay, if you're a tier one supporter, you get my special email every month. If you're a tier two supporter, I'll send you an album and the email. If you're a tier three supporter, I'll give you a t-shirt that's been signed, or like there's different levels. Like if you give me, you know, if you're on the highest tier, we're going to have dinner once a year because you're awesome. And, different people can choose the options of like what level, and then every time you produce something and release it, they are being charged. So if I'm paying you $1 for each release, every time you release something, I'm going to give you $1 because I like you and I want to support your art. And it's just, it's still, you know, kind of the first wave users have worked out some kinks, but there's, it's still in development. They're still trying to figure like, how does this work and how do, you know, you let people pay for art. It's kind of like Amanda Palmer, too, of like, we need to stop thinking about it as a business that you have to, like, make people pay for your music and say, why don't we just let them pay what they can and it'll all balance out in the end. Anyways, so if you're interested checking out, if you're listening, you can check it out. I think it's a good format. It's, you know, someone who doesn't have loads of money, I can choose a few artists and feel like I'm supporting them in what they do because I like it.
No, that's great. I don't spend so much time on the internet. But, you know,
that's probably just as well.
I've been busking at the park.
Oh, really? Central or Prospect? Fort Greene Park.
Yeah, that's been really fun.
Nice.
I've saved like a stack. You can't see the stack of ones that I'm holding up, but a stack of ones about this.
Oh, like
this
3 big. Feet tall?
Yeah, and they all come from like, you know, there's so many kids at the park, and so like, you know, once, you know, it's really cute to see little kids walk up with like dollar bills.
They're,
you know,
so
like,
excited.
So yeah, and so like I've over the summer, like I played in the neighborhood and at the park like every week at least twice, and you know, I was met so many families and so many people, and like, you know, saved a lot of busking money. I think I'm gonna buy a motorhome with it.
Well, bam, there you go.
That's my Kickstarter.
Yeah.
My localization Kickstarter.
It's pretty consistent, is it, for you?
Yeah.
That's why here, I haven't made the leap into actually doing something like that, but I kind of have a secret wish of being a street statue, because I'm not musically inclined, but I could maybe think of something creative and stand and see what
I think art and music is going more in that direction, like just in general, where it's like, you know, people can get anything. You can get any song, any band, any type of music, anything, and it's almost too much. Like, it's overwhelming to even think about it, you know, and so it's kind of diluted. And what's not diluted anymore is, like, you know, stumbling upon that, like, beautiful music in the subway, or you know, that person who's like sitting with a typewriter on Bedford saying, I'll write you a poem, or you know, it's these things that like take you closer to the present, you know, like when you stumble upon them, and when they come to you, then you like you stop and you take a breath and you absorb. And even on the internet, like I don't know, like I hardly listen to, and I should be, I think, but like I hardly listen to any new music or any and here I am, like I'm playing music and I'm making music and I'm not even listening to music that's being made right now. Like I've been stuck in 1934 or whatever, listening to like old folk blues records, but like there's very, very beautiful music being made today. It's just like it's hard to like wade through the mix.
Gosh, my mind is going so many places. I think about an article I think the Huffington Post put out that was like, did you know that all of the hit songs in the past, like, when I don't know, 20, 50 years have all been written by the same dudes? Like, all these like pop hit songs are like kind of like just repeats of themselves. And so for when you do like stumble upon something that's like authentic and different and present, like you're just walking through your day and then something calls you. Have you heard of Joshua Bell?
Uh-uh.
He's a violinist, and they did this really interesting experiment where they had him play in a subway, and most beautiful, like, intense. He's very talented. People will pay over $100 for a ticket to see him. In the subway, no one noticed. They were just on their way to work. They couldn't be called out of their, you know, their zone, whatever, except for one guy who recognized him and put $100. But he, like, did not fare well in the subway, which I find so interesting, because had they known who he was or had taken the time to, like, breathe and hear instead of, like, but it is New York, and it's busy, and it's sometimes necessary to, like, zone out and, like, shut off.
And everyone's in their, like, their virtual car, you know? Like, you know, when you're commuting, everyone's in a hurry. They're honking in different ways.
You don't talk to people.
I mean, and I would busk in the subways. I think I haven't done it for a while because it's I don't know. It's really bittersweet. Like, in one sense, like people do stumble upon each other, and it's a really, really great like environment to hear music because the acoustics are beautiful and they go on forever. And I love hearing it, and I love playing down in the subway. But there's something more, like, I guess there's an art to busking, and it's like finding not only the spot, but finding like a spot where like people are going to have time and like be open to listening.
Okay, the park.
Yeah, at the park and the farmer's market, because in here you got people that are immersing themselves within community and like local, you know, locally produced resources. And these are the kinds of people that I want to be playing for. I don't want to be playing for like the person who's like pissed off because they just missed the L train. You know, like I want to be playing for like people with their families, and it's really fun. I just bring like shakers and like drums and stuff, and I throw it out there, and like the kids come and play.
Oh,
and
it's
so
like
the
a
kids
hoot
are
nanny.
Playing. Yeah, it's a hoot nanny.
Yes,
yeah. Exactly. And so like that for me, like I guess call it like a localization project for like starting at the beginning of last summer has made me feel. And my wife and I live in Fort Greene, like Clinton Hill area.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've never felt more at home. Like right now, in like in
because
my 8 years
out
of New
in
York,
it.
Yeah. And now like I walk down the street and I get to talk to, you know, like there's this really sweet kid on our block that goes, "That's Mississippi Cotton. That's Mississippi Cotton." Yeah, Michael
and then
Nietzsche.
You just like beam.
Yeah. It's so much more than money or status. You know, like and like there are those relationships in the community that you're in, and that's why it's been, I don't know, it's been the best, like the best musical 6 months of my life.
So I'm curious, like if you were to challenge an artist.
Sorry, I'm gonna tune what I can listen to.
You're good. If you were to challenge an artist, you know, or for me who I'm a writer, It's a similar thing. You're pushed to get your stuff out there as much as possible to, in some sense, connect to the world so you can try and find the audience. And yet, there's also something to be said for, like, calling it back. So this sounds like an organic process in your life where you were kind of just, like, over the industry of music and you were just like, I'm just going to go out and play and, you know,
play. Yeah, it's a very fine line. I mean, and to the, you know, in a struggle, maybe my stubbornness, like, you know, with this kind of oil and water mix, you know, like money and music or art and money, like it shakes together and it's mixed together for like for 5 seconds and then like separate. It can't really go. Like, I mean, and I feel like it's a really weird state to be in where you're living in a world full of money and things and you I guess need it to keep going, but you're also trying to share something that can't be like quantified.
Yeah.
Right? And so to mix them together, it works, and a lot of people have made a lot of money with music and with art, but I think that they fail, you know. I think that it's a false success. And
well, I think you start to lose the connection, which is what you're like calling back into being in your own art. As if you get so big, you don't see people anymore, you're kind of isolated in your success.
Yeah, there's a beautiful there's a beautiful quote that I heard from her name is Helena Norberg Hodge, and she wrote this book called Ancient Futures: Learning from the Ladakh. And so Ladakh is like a country in the northern India, like near Tibet, and she studied their culture and realized, long story short, realized that globalization compared to localization. I lost track of thought.
Okay.
She said our arms have grown so long that we can't see what our hands are doing. You know, I think that, you know, our arms are things are coming to us from so far away that we're not even seeing what's happening at the, you know, like at that source.
Sure.
And like with the economy, with food, with music, with art,
gosh.
with our whole system, like we need to shift more towards like a local distribution of everything. You know, and music for me, I was like, I don't know anything about economics. I don't know anything about politics. I don't know anything about science. You know what I mean? I can sing and play guitar. You know what I mean? I was trying to like read sociology books and like get myself into economics because I needed to understand this. And then I got to a point where it's like, you know what? I've got the thing that I do, and that's music. Mm-hmm. And I think I can shift my approach to living to more and localize my music and localize myself. Mm-hmm. And that idea, like localization isn't just about like getting food from a farm. It's about like relying on the people that are around you.
Sure.
You know, and not having to waste resources and energy like getting things from across the world. You know, and so going back to music, like I guess there's not so much waste being involved, like with digital music and like getting music from around the world, but like it's more of maybe like a waste of consciousness in a way where like,
or where you have to plug in order to hear something instead of just like.
And then you're so distracted with all the other things. Like I'm still rocking a dumb phone because I know that like, you know, if I get on a smartphone,
it's just
like
gonna be a distraction.
Gonna, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I like that. Rumi has this comment. His poem. I guess it's a poem. There is a community of the spirit. And in it, he says, you know, walk down the street and hear the noise and you be like, and you are the noise. Do you know what I'm talking about? I can't remember the wording exactly. I'll put it in the notes because it is a beautiful saying of just like, you know, hearing and being around what's around you.
Yeah. And now we're so far away from where we are in our minds, you know, because of having, like you can hold up that screen or whatever and it's infinite, you know.
Yeah.
And then there's also infinity around you. in the like mm-hmm. in the actual present. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, that just like clouds people's minds so much.
Sure. You've been tuning for a while. Do you have a song in mind?
I do. I was changing the tuning. and then realized it didn't tune with my harmonica. Let me tune it up really quick. I'll play a song I play at the park a bunch. I was told I'm borrowing this guitar from a student of mine, Emily. Mine's in the shop for 4 weeks. I dropped it the last time I was at the park. Yeah.
Oh no. Well, thanks for being here, Nancy. We believe in you.
I believe in you too, Nancy. You can do it. Nancy loves opening. Here we go.
Screaming is haunting my dream, and I'm wearily waking up. Oh, sweet Gracie, I can see your face again. Your makeup's wearing off. Hungry for a world she can see outside. She can't get through the door. No matter how easy I try, I drink so hard I can't get off the floor. Oh, Violet, I've never loved you more. Around you, there's beauty all around. Pick some up, pick yourself up. What a lovely world you found. When I'm just sitting silent, somehow been blinded by the dark. And I can't teach you how to sing, but I can surely show you how to bark. But at the end, there's a pipeline, and at the end of the pipeline, there's a spark. One plus one is one. Well, you thought six, but it's not six anymore. One plus one is. suffering. The tree told me that money's not a facet she would cut. And as my diamonds dull, I'm shining brighter, happier down here with you in this rut. And I can't tell you anything, not how or why or where or even what. But there's a new era coming, there's a new era coming. I can feel it deep down. I can feel it deep down. I can feel it deep down in my gut.
Wonderful. We're actually getting close to the end of the show.
Sure.
And I like to do a type of rapid fire, which is just a series of questions. And if the answers are long, awesome. If the answers are I don't know, cool. Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. A lot of them are about books, so we'll just go from there. What book have you not gotten around to reading? Is there like a book that you're like, I keep meaning to read that, but...
Well, I was born in 1984, and I feel like that book, 1984, I've never read, like, so I should read that.
That'd be a good one to read. I was curious, too, have you ever tried audiobooks?
Mm-mm.
I wonder if it would change the experience.
I just got a couple Dylan Thomas records, the poet Dylan Thomas, and those are great to listen to, but...
There you
go.
No
audiobooks.
Ah, well, maybe if one happens in your life, you can see how you like it. Is there a book that you remember your parents reading to you?
Panda Bear's Paint Box.
Ooh, that sounds great.
Check it out.
I will. I haven't heard of that one, but it sounds fun. That's kids'
it's like
books
four
are so fun. And I went to an event last week. P.S. There weren't really anything happening this week because of the holidays. But I went to an event last week about children's books. And the proctor asked the artists, the writers, they're like, did you have kids in mind when you write? And they're like, no, I'm just writing a story. And the publisher is like, oh, this is for kids. Which is like, go read kids' books. They're so fun and creative.
So awesome.
And they make your life better. Do you have any rituals or routines around your reading or writing, or we'll say songwriting?
Sure, yeah. I do the same thing pretty much every time I pick up the guitar. Is, you know, something rhythmic, and I kind of hum or sing along with the strings. So, like, I'll just kind of, like, I usually set, like, a metronome to, like, mm-hmm. 50 beats per minute, and then just do, like... like hum
until
along
something
with it,
comes.
Like, no. I'll go through and I'll play each one of the six strings by themselves, and just kind of, I mean, like breathe or hum or like just kind of like be aware of like any tension that I have, and then I'll come to this side and I'll do like an exercise here, and then usually I'll just like pick a chord. I'll be like that chord, and then I'm just gonna let some things fall out of my mouth, you know, like in hum or just like kind of. Not write a song, you know, just kind of sing gibberish or maybe
nice.
Something comes. Yeah.
Perfect. I like that. Uh-huh. I bet that there is something to that, like grounding your voice with the guitar.
Mm-hmm. They kind of can. You can feel like the back of the guitar, like kind of entering your chest cavity, and then vice versa. You know,
you guys are interacting. It's like a sound vibration dance.
Yeah. Yeah.
I kind of asked this, and you didn't really have one. But was there like a book that helped your transition into puberty, or that like stood out as like a book that changed the way you saw the world?
Not really. Not unless puberty was when I was 24, you know, like.
Hey, that works. Yeah. What book?
I think from what we talked about
Light
before.
Light on Yoga?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Hey, that's, you know, sometimes people never grow up. I think I might be one of them. How do you find books? You find books on the street. Is there another avenue?
I have students that bring me books. I have a student Francis. He gave me Aldous Huxley, Doors of Perception, which kind of blew my mind. And that and like talking about Carl Jung with him, you know, that was a good shift.
Yeah.
Good gift.
On your bookcase, are there any authors who are showcased, like Line of Sight, Eye Level, you know?
I don't really have books out. Just, okay. I mean, I have records out.
What is the best writing advice you've been given?
Don't think.
I like it. What is the best book that you've disagreed with? Is there one? It's a tricky question.
Well, disagreed. I mean, this is going to sound awful, but not disagreed, but just like it hasn't resonated with me. Like, I got a book from, or the Bhagavad Gita, like, was given to me, the Bhagavad Gita as it is,
sure.
Like, from this guy that I met through, like, the climate march. And, you know, and I tried to read it. It's just like, I can't wrap my head around it. So, like, I mean, yeah. It disagrees, but not in a negative way.
Not in, like, you react not to like it, but more like you're just like, I really wish I could like this, but I'm just not.
Everything's explained almost too much. You know, it's like, I mean, I think a lot of these, like, old texts, like, are just, like, we got to find a way to reinvent the same message, you know?
Well, a lot of that is coming from something oral, right? Like, a lot of these older texts, even, like, years and years and years before they became, like, a hard, tangible thing, they were just, like, stories that one person told to the next person and you had to, like, memorize, in a sense. So maybe that's part of the repetition of, like, even if they forget something, the message will still get through. I'm curious. I don't know. And what writers have most influenced you? Probably songwriters. And you mentioned, what's his name from, the one that's like, I just sing my blues.
Mississippi Fred McDowell. Yeah.
Yeah. Any other people who have influenced you?
Well, kind of at the shift of the Mississippi Cotton thing, the Elizabeth Cotton, Cotten, Elizabeth Cotton, I heard a couple songs from her, and she's just got she's got a voice that's like almost painful to listen to, but like in a such a beautiful way. Like, it's out of tune, and she's like all gnarly, but she's singing from a spot that like it doesn't matter. And that was one of the big things that shifted my songwriting.
Yeah,
you know, like not and my songs in general, so that like it didn't always have to be set in stone, and like it didn't always have to be perfect, and like it didn't have to be like something that didn't, you know, that even carried on from that moment that I played it then, you know.
Sure. I'm going to close out. Thanks for listening to Ink and Worm. I'm your host, Swan, and we've been talking to Kyle Tiggis. I was singing like Tigger in my brain. Okay, up next we have Empty Orchestra with Angelica and Amanda. And I'll leave you with a word, and then you can take us out with a song, if you don't mind.
Oh, great. That'd be great.
So here's your word, take it or leave it. Bifurcate.
Well, now's the time for your loving dear, and the time for your company. When the light of reason fails, and when the fires burn on the sea, oh, in this time of confusion, dear, I have need for your company. Once I was free to go roaming in on the wings of a springtime mind. Once those clouds I soared upon, they were sweet like lilac wine. Oh, why are breezes of summer, dear, all inlaced with a grim design? 'Cause now's the time for your loving, dear, and the time for your company. When the light of reason fails, and when the fires burn on the sea, oh, in this time of confusion, dear, I
have need for your company. We are the children of angry men.